And we will just look around and, as Carl said, look at all the wonderful faces and names that we have in our boxes and our elaborate game of Hollywood Squares here. It's good to be here. normally, I would not be here during the month of July because I spend for the last 7 years the month of July in Ireland. And so while you are in these fabulous Hollywood Squares, I would, in theory, be sitting on Galway Bay, having a cup of tea and watching the sailboats come in and out of the harbor. But that's not to be. And so instead I get to be here, and whoever was supposed to speak tonight was not able to. And so I got a message asking if I could fill in. So all is right in the world. I guess I'm right where I'm supposed to be. But you know, I've been thinking a lot about how we can show up and know that all is right in the world, even in 2020, which is a very interesting year. And what I've been thinking about a lot is the epidemic of loneliness and isolation that exists in the world and is being researched by all sorts of important researchers and written about in all sorts of currently and formerly important magazines. And just the idea that there's such a degree of loneliness, both for people who happen to be living alone and for people who are living in housing situations that they're with their loved ones, but they still feel lonely. And so we'll talk about that a little bit. But one of the things that we do as human beings is we say, why me? Why is this happening to me? You know, never mind that there's a pandemic that's worldwide, that there's racial unrest that is 450 years old and deeply rooted in hatred, et cetera, that we all must be active in fighting against. But we tend to say, why me? Why is this, you know, I'm supposed to be in Ireland this month, so why is this happening to me? And the fact of the matter is that as Buddhists, we should be asking a different question, which is, why not me? You know, why not me? I am not separate from the world. I am of the world. I am not separate from my community, the city, the state, the country that I live in. And so why not me? If I accept that interconnectedness of all beings, then the why me becomes not a really useful question. So, you know, the Buddha is referred to as the Tathagata. That comes from the Sanskrit word, tathatha, which is means reality. And so we're given this wonderful opportunity as Buddhists to say, what is reality? If I'm not different than anyone else and we are all sharing this reality together, what is the reality? And how can we work together to create a reality that is humane and compassionate and not isolated and lonely, frankly? So it starts, I think, with mindfulness. And as we all know, Jon Kabat-Zinn says that mindfulness is paying attention on purpose in this present moment and without judgment. So we you know, take a look around us, and here it is, 6:03 on a Monday evening, and we're with an entire screen full / room full of brothers and sisters who are on a path to return to their authentic selves and to return to a way of life that's filled with compassion. So we're doing pretty well. But, you know, for me, I just use myself as an example that I had been really worried and for several weeks, not the first couple of weeks, I thought I could survive 2 weeks of shelter in place. And then I started to get worried about how many, you know, what the impact of a couple months of this would be. And of course, now we're in our fifth month. You know, I'm a person in recovery, so I need my fellowship. I'm a person in Buddhism, and so I need my sanghas. And I thought, surely this is going to have a devastating impact. And of course, I'm also an old queen, so I had to lament about it a lot. I had to talk about how isolated I was, and how lonely I was, and how lonely and isolated you all looked, and oh, mercy, aren't we all just in a mess? But the fact of the matter is, when I think about reality, when I think about the truth, the reality of 2020, I live in a nice apartment. I can walk to the ocean from here, which I'm allowed to do, even under all of the shutdown conditions. I can come on Monday night and see all of you. And I can come and go as I please. And at any hour of the day, there are recovery meetings and sanghas. And as wonderful as we all are here in the Bay Area looking at each other on Monday night, I have in the last week sat meditation with folks in Galway, in Paris, in Montreal, and in a bunch of states, just, you know, because I'm looking for things to do. And it's great to see all of you. And it was really great to branch out and just go online looking for meditation meetings and sitting in with them. So the fact is that I could be isolated if I wanted to be. That could be a label that could be applied to, you know, a senior citizen living alone in an apartment and during shelter in place. But that wasn't really useful for me. And it wasn't useful for me in interacting with any of you or any of my friends or family or any of the people I teach or provide therapy to. And so what happened was I decided that I'm not going to be isolated. I'm going to make the most of it. I'm going to take the opportunities we have to connect electronically and spiritually, whether we see each other or not. And so that would be a good thing. And then, of course, the next thing to come down the path was I read an article about Zoom fatigue and that everybody was now, instead of being isolated, everybody was overwhelmed and exhausted and they couldn't stand being on Zoom anymore. So as is my wont, as I finished that article, I came down with 6 of the 7 symptoms immediately. knew that now I had a new way to suffer. and, you know, I thought to myself for a couple of weeks there, if I hear one more person get on in a Buddhist discussion group and talk about how the experiences of 2020 have really broadened their spiritual practice and really made them much deeper, I thought I was going to have to hurl my computer from the 6-story window of this apartment. And then just as I was beginning to like get into that, you know, having something to suffer about, now I had Zoom fatigue. I went to a beautiful talk by a guy who's Oren J. Sofar, I think his name is. He's over in Berkeley somewhere. And he was talking about inviting us to a practice called listening generously. Sharon Salzberg talks about that also. And the idea of that is to really listen to what a person is saying. To really, if we're on a Zoom call or with a friend for a walk or with the person that you live with, if you're living with someone, just to really listen to them with deep, deep generosity and allow them to say what they need to say, even if it's different than what they said yesterday, and even if it's, I suspect, different than what they may say tomorrow, but to allow them to speak their truth and make a safe place for that. You know, the fact of the matter is that what's good about that practice of generous, it's part of right speech, you know, wise and compassionate listening. But if we listen with generosity, really allowing that person who might be feeling overwhelmed, who might be feeling isolated, who might be feeling frustrated that, you know, job situations have gone from bad to worse, you know, everything might be going well for them, whatever it is, to just let them speak their truth and to be there. And the other part of that teaching, which is so wonderful for us, that Sharon Salzberg talks about, was it's really skillful means. Because if we are listening to them and creating space for them and allowing them to speak, we're not thinking about ourselves for that period of time. And so we will obviously suffer less if we're not thinking about ourselves for as much of the amount of time. So we can be engaged in this service to our roommates or spouses or family or friends, a service that's truly on the Bodhisattva path, showing us service to all beings. And so I don't know why that came as a surprise. It was wonderful to hear this particular talk about generosity, generous listening, you know, part of wise speech. And so I wondered, you know, how I could forget that and forget other things. You know, old teachings, new ears, I guess, new opportunities to listen. But, you know, the fact is we're not separate. You know, we believe in the teaching of the Buddha, as taught a lot by Thich Nhat Hanh and others, that there's an interconnectedness between all of us. When one of us suffers, we all suffer. When there's injustice for one, there's injustice for all. And when there's happiness and a sense of true connection and friendship and Kalyanamitta, as the Buddha calls it, then we all have that as well. And so we can spend our time, I could spend my time, I won't speak for the rest of you, I invite you, to feeling isolated and overwhelmed. I could spend my time saying, this is the reality I live in, and I'm not going to be in denial, things are tough, but I'm also not going to let that be the organizing principle of my life. I'm going to let, you know, the 17 of us in this meeting tonight be the organizing principle of my life. And so I was reading an interesting study last week that I'm sure some of you have seen or heard, but the National Science Institute put out a study that says The average person has between 50 and 70,000 thoughts a day, 50 and 70,000 separate thoughts a day. And I thought, well, no wonder I go from being isolated to overworked. The brain is always busy and obviously could be exhausted. But the interesting thing was what they were studying in this particular study, and it was folks at University of California, Berkeley that conducted the study, and it was a fairly large study, is that 80% of those thoughts, 80% are negative and self-critical types of thoughts. 80% of the 60,000 thoughts that we have a day. And there's something we can do about that. You know, it's not 100%. So that other 20%, which is a lot of thoughts, if you think about 80,000 thoughts a day, is there's a lot of practices that we have in Buddhism that will help us with that. And the other interesting statistic just for you to talk about over dinner tonight is that 95% of those thoughts, so if you're having 50 to 70,000 thoughts a day, 95% of those are repetitive thoughts. You had them yesterday and you had them the day before. And each time you have them, they just get a little more rooted. Again, that's something we can do something about if we are bring mindful awareness to the fact that that's what's going on. Repetitive thoughts would happen today and will happen tomorrow and the next day until we do something, take some action about it. So there's lots of things that we can do about that. One of which is to really think about our lives and the teachings that we have in Buddhism and just the teachings that we know. We can take a look at the emotions that we're having. And we all know that over the years, psychologists, and some of you are that, and so you would know that we basically said there are six human emotions, happiness and sadness, fear and anger, surprise and disgust. Well, you know, we're modern people, so we don't go along with that. And the new list that's out, which I won't bore you with, but the new list that's out, you can just Google 27 human emotions. And there's a new list that's been researched where they can identify for all of us that we have at least 27 separate ones. And I was looking at that list and trying to figure out how we could count on our emotions to help us with some of the other stuff. And calmness and satisfaction are among the new measurable emotions that human beings can have that weren't on there before. Aesthetic appreciation is on there. And interest, joy, and romance are on there now instead of disgust, which was on that other list. So I've been thinking about how can we figure out a way that as we live in some isolation and shelter in place, as we live with a great desire to be in contact with other human beings as our cities and states open up, and for some of us as we live with a certain amount of fear about opening the schools or the restaurants or whatever, and we want human contact, but you know, what exactly does that mean? So I think that there are some practices that we can use from our Buddhist practice to help us and help those that we come in contact with. You know, I think that it's natural for us to be feeling a lot of emotions right now, but not to be stuck in any set of emotions. It's natural for us to be having negative thoughts and concerned thoughts and anxious thoughts, but we don't have to go with just those. You know, we don't have to repeat those thoughts day in and day out. So one of the realities that Buddhism invites us to think about is the many different versions of me or you that we deal with. Stephen the teacher, Stephen the therapist, Stephen the friend, Stephen the son, the brother, the priest. So those are a bunch of different selves, you know, that we walk around with. Sometimes we use the expression wearing a lot of hats. Well, the fact of the matter is that what Buddhism invites us to do is to return to our authentic self. And symbolically, in many lineages of Buddhism, we sew a robe that's bringing together many pieces of cloth and sewing them back into one robe that's the Buddha's teaching. And so I think that this practice is this wonderful practice, because I'm not really a different person when I'm Stephen the teacher and Stephen the therapist or Stephen the friend, and you're not different when you're the son or daughter, spouse, lover, neighbor, than you are when you're on your cushion, except that sometimes we think we are. And so the gift of Buddhism, when the Buddhist teachings talk about returning to our authentic self, being liberated, and having the opportunity to go back to our original or authentic self, really is that opportunity to say, okay, so if when I'm practicing as a priest, I'm different than when I'm hanging out with my friends in any significant way around my vows and my commitment to social justice and my commitment to anti-racist, anti-sexist life to live in. And if I'm not doing that in each of those places, well, then the deal isn't that there's different me's. The deal is that some versions of me are not operating at full spiritual steam, so to speak. And so one of the things we get to do in practice, over and over, we're invited to return to our authentic self. And this would be a great time for me and others to think about that many hats that you're wearing out there, the many selves, that the many versions of yourself that fill up your life. So there's a couple other little simple practices that you know, but I'll just remind us all. One is, in the recovery world, we have a practice that other people use, but it comes from there as well, which is a gratitude list. And so, as I said, in the first few weeks of shelter in place, I was thinking, oh, I'm trapped in my house and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the gratitude list practice that many people use, Sylvia Bornstein uses it a lot, Thich Nhat Hanh uses it as a teaching, is just when you wake up in the morning to write down 3, 5, or if you're really creative, 10 things that you're grateful for. And it's just, you know, I woke up today. I have a house, if I do. There's food here, if there is. I'm with people that I care about, if you are. Or simply, I have a chance to do it right today. I didn't do so good yesterday, but I have one more day to get this right. All things to be grateful for. And we know from science that if you incline your mind towards the positive, that is where it goes when it needs someplace to go. If you incline your mind to that 80% of negative talk and self-criticism, when you have a moment where your mind is lurching somewhere, it's likely to go that way. So this gratitude practice is just a way to balance those scales a little bit. And so that's a simple practice that we can all do. There's another practice that I think is a really important one. It's on the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh about interconnectedness. And it's simply that in the midst of whatever my life is presenting for me, such as shelter in place, we have this opportunity to say, oh, you know, I'm lonely and I'm feeling all isolated and so forth. Or I can make a note that every time I think that I'm lonely or every time that I think that I'm experiencing isolation, that I pick up the phone and either call or text somebody who I know also lives alone or is going through something. And I simply send them a message or speak to them, preferably, and say, how you doing? You know, not calling them to talk about me, going back to that other thought, but to just to say, I'm thinking about you. I was wondering how you're doing today. What's going on with you? And again, it goes back to that teaching from Sharon Salzberg that if I'm doing that, if I'm calling any of the people that I happen to know from the Sangha or from other social interactions that, you know, might just need to check in. Doesn't have to be like I'm calling because I think there's something wrong with them. Just I'm thinking of you. And I wanted to find out how you're doing. And it's as simple as that. And what that does is the two things. On the one hand, I'm doing bodhisattva service. I'm living and being lived for the benefit of others. And on the other, I'm not thinking about me if I'm thinking about somebody else. And the trick, of course, is when you get on those phone calls or text messages to keep it about the other person. You know, many of us, and I have been guilty at various points in my life, not so much lately, I don't think, but I'll say, you know, so-and-so, I'm just calling to check, see how you're doing. So I'm fine, how are you? It's like, oh, well, oh, if you had my troubles, you wouldn't even be able. And so the thing is, Sylvia Bornstein uses an expression, which is wait. And you can just have that on your phone or somewhere nearby, WAIT, and it stands for why am I talking? Why am I talking? You know, the phone call started out to be an act of kindness for the other person, and it should remain that to the degree possible. So that's the teaching of interconnectedness that Thich Nhat Hanh has. And, you know, I think before you even do that, if you're not good at making phone calls or text, you could use a version of the gratitude list that has to do with the interconnection. And that practice is simply when you wake up in the morning, say to yourself, who are 2 or 3, depending on your amount of time, or 5 people that I'm going to reach out to today? You know, we all know, unfortunately, people that are out there right now that even before shelter in place, that were feeling lonely or isolated, or they might sometimes come to the Sangha, but they never speak. And, you know, maybe today my commitment can be, who will I reach out to today that I haven't reached out to before? And again, it's a simple practice. You can do it between your bed and the cup of tea or coffee or the shower or wherever you're going. And you just make a mental note that today I'm going to live in service by making this phone call. And again, it just reminds you that there are people out there that need you, and that most of us need to be in connection with other human beings. And so it's a two-way street. And so we get that opportunity to practice that. And, you know, the Buddha, when asked about, somebody told him that they had formed some good Buddhist friendships, some good friendships in the Sangha. And they said, isn't that half of the spiritual life? And as you all recall, the Buddha said, no, that's all of the spiritual life. That comes first. And so then I think that the gift that we really get to offer is that as we become who we are and return to our original self, what we get to understand is that there is obviously some reasons for isolation and aloneness. As we each forge our individual path through life and our careers and our relationships and our friendships and our creative endeavors, you know, we each go a different way. And sometimes that does have a sense of taking me down this path and the next person down this path. And I think the gift that we get when we think about our lives is that those don't put us at competition. What those put us is on parallel paths where we can reach out, not as long as it's 6 feet away, we can reach out and symbolically touch the other person and light the path for the other person. And not on the same path. We're not all clutched together all the time. Sometimes you're pursuing your creativity. I'm doing some writing. Someone else is doing some teaching. But the gift that we have is that we're all on a path to lead lives that are filled with compassion and concern. And so we get an opportunity to motivate each other and to encourage each other and to give each other the opportunity to say, you know what? I'm standing on my ground and you're standing on yours, and we used to be this close together and now we're sort of over here. But that's not isolation, that's sacred solitude. And that's one of the gifts of the Buddha, is sacred solitude. We go on retreats, we sit zazen, we do a number of things that cause us to come to ourselves and to be in this present moment by ourselves. And the best way for me to do zazen is in a room, or at least on Zoom camera with all of you. And so that's another gift of this program, is for us not to think of it as isolation, not to read the magazine articles that say there's an epidemic of loneliness, but to say we have 17 friends during this hour right now, and that for one half of the session, nobody was talking. And we were all together, and we were all doing things that will improve the quality of our spiritual lives, our emotional lives, and our physical lives. And so, you know, we long for contact, and sometimes we forget that we have it. And we long for a little time to be by ourselves, and sometimes we forget that we have it. And so I think what 2020 has the opportunity to teach us is that we do in fact have the opportunity for sacred solitude, the opportunity to come to ourselves in this present moment, and the opportunity to be on 17 different paths with those of you who are here tonight. Know that that doesn't make us isolated or alone, that makes us together. Thank you. And I think we have a couple minutes if anybody had a question or wanted to add a comment or say anything or not. All quiet on the Western Front. Okay, Carl, we give it to you. Oh, Loki.
Loki, you had something?
Oh, yeah, this is just perfect right now to hear. Thank you. I mean, it's a perfect talk because I fall into that loneliness, and then I realize I'm not really, for everything you said. So you just hit that sweet spot of Buddha nature emerging.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen, so much. Let's sit together for a minute or so as we close. Well, as we contemplate Stephen's beautiful teaching to us today, may the merit of our time together, hearing the Dharma and practicing together, may be for the benefit of each of us, and may that benefit spread to all beings everywhere. May all of us and all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness. May all beings, including all of us, be safe from all the dangers and harm that may be out there. May we all live with ease and well-being and remain healthy in body and mind. And ultimately, may all beings everywhere be free. Stephen, thanks again for that wonderful talk, and thank you all for being here. As you know, we're a totally self-organized, self-supporting little sangha, just starting our 19th year together. And it's only been through the generosity of everyone who attends that keeps us going. I mean, and that's what keeps the Dharma going for all of these centuries, is the generosity, the giving of our time, of our money, of the support we give to each other and to the people that we care about, and even strangers who we don't even know. So it's just through that generosity that we can all be grateful to be a part of this sangha and just the whole expanse of community of humanity. So Stephen has generously donated any donations that he would normally get, as any teacher does who comes, to the Sangha. And so you can give through the Sangha. I think Trina just posted, it's through our website, sflgbtsangha.org. And at the top, there's a little button that says join us. And that window will open where there's a little donate button. You'll be able to find it. So please be as generous as you can. So even though the Buddhist Center, where we normally meet, had offered us to be rent-free during this period, since we're not obviously using the center, we decided that we would continue to pay the rent there to support them in their expenses for their building and all the, you know, the stuff that they have been generous with us over the years. So please go online and give Donna to the Sangha so we can continue to give to the Buddhist Center and support our little Sangha together. It's really great to see everybody as always. Please be safe. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday. Mm-hmm. Does anybody have any?